Hey, it looks like you're really desperate over there. Perhaps I could have your body.
I'm not going to do anything weird with it. Just the hand stuff, you know.
Just my little fingies, get them all in there, you know, nothing weird.
Oh, God.
It was the year of fire takes.
The year of deconstruction.
The year we took down Deep Space Nine.
It was the dawn of a new show.
The year of a great journey.
The year of deadlines.
And the year of joy.
It was a new season.
It was the end of another.
It was the year everything changed.
The year is 2026.
The name of the show, You Gotta Check This Out.
Welcome back to You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. Of course, Mike of MikeSlater.com, Slatron across the internet, and myself, Dre. We are still hip deep in Babylon 5. We're on to season 4, what many argue is the greatest season, and we have decided to get an outside referee. So, Mike, who do we got on tonight?
This week, we have John Ryman from a Gainfully Unemployed podcast and kind of whatever else he may want to tell us about. John?
Well, yeah, I have two podcasts actually on the Gainfully Unemployed Network. WrestleMovia with my buddy Logan Trent, who I believe you guys had on as a guest the episode before me.
Yeah, we call that the future, what is it, the future past, right, Mike? So that will be the future for people listening, but the past for the current show. Love that.
Ooh, okay. But yeah, we have a podcast called WrestleMovia. We just watch movies with wrestlers in them. Sometimes they're bad, sometimes they're fun. It seems like the ones we've been watching a lot recently have been pretty bad, but the episodes are always fun. You can look for that. Our Christmas episode just came out for that one at the beginning of January.
That was gold. I did promise Logan that I was waiting to listen to that before I watched the movie, and I could not bring it to myself to actually watch Santa with Muscles, so I just listened to the podcast.
Why would you? I'm listening to the podcast episode, and if there's something you could learn from Logan Trent, John Ryman, Eric Barnes, a regular NWO of talent, is, dear God, do not watch Santa with Muscles. All right, so WrestleMovia, you can also see screenplay also over at Gainfully Unemployed.
Yes.
Two great things to watch. John, before we get going on all the Babylon 5, I do really just have to ask, we're bringing you in blind, middle of season 4.
Blind as a bat.
What did you think?
I didn't hate it. It was entertaining. It reminded me like a dime store Deep Space Nine is really what it felt like to me.
Ah, that's...
If Deep Space Nine's not available for you, this will do.
And are you aware of the ties between Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine, how they started the same from JMS's book?
No, yeah. I didn't. Okay.
Any listener can go to previous episodes about this, but JMS brought the Bible of how he created the entire series that would become Babylon 5. Brought it to, what was it, Paramount at the time or whoever
Paramount would be the controller of.
Yeah. And they took it and ended up developing Deep Space Nine with it as he simultaneously developed Babylon 5 with another network. The legalities that came out of it was they're both allowed to have the shows, but they're not allowed to sue each other or do anything legally against each other. So it was like this, you know, this devil's bargain they had. But everybody at the, you know, looking back at it now, that is the comparison everybody has to make. It's so obvious that, yeah, this is shares some weird DNA for a low-budget Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, it's like a Deep Space Nine, but it seems like everybody on the station is a creep. So it's
That's
like Creep Space Nine.
That's how we
Nine.
Started first episode. You see Garibaldi coming out just creeping on one of the other actresses in the elevator.
Oof.
Sorry, the turbo lift.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, I thought because you see Garibaldi in the dark, and I was like, is that Hank from Breaking Bad? It kept doing that. Like, I even conflated these two shows, like with something different. Because like when you asked me if I wanted to come on do it, I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, and I was thinking to myself, is that the one with Katie Sackhoff and Edward James Olmos? Wait, no,
it's the other one that's a lot like Babylon 5.
Is this the one where an astronaut is caught in like an alien dimensional warp? No, that's Farscape. Oh, Babylon 5. I know nothing about
that. To the point of that, like you're saying, coming in blind, didn't do much. I think for most people, they caught a little of it like real time. But for most guests seem like you're going to follow the same oeuvre, didn't really catch it and didn't really stick in their mind. And the Deep Space Nine connection does show what everybody was actually watching.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't even watch Deep Space Nine that much, but I had seen a couple episodes and I knew where it was. So, but I was just like, oh, yeah, this is just a space station. Seems like we got a lot of alien races coming and going. There's conflict. Yeah, it's Deep Space Nine.
The big point of Babylon 5 is that it was episodic from beginning to end. It was five seasons that JMS had written as one big story.
Oh, and wow. Okay.
So it's almost kind of a social experiment we're doing with people, especially as it gets later on in the story, throw you in the middle and get your reaction to it. But yeah.
A lot of creeps. Like I said, there's a lot of creeps in this episode. And chief among them is Walter Koenig. And I saw his name in there. I was like, what the hell?
Although
really?
What's key is, because we're going to talk a lot of Bester. Bester is notably a villain, and we'll talk a ton of that. The rest of the cast.
See Chekhov's Chekhov in an episode. You know he's going to come back later.
Ooh. But what we do know, I've been debating this, John, about an article, and this is an exclusive for Mike, like how the command staff is just bad at their job in this show, and they are creeps. But with that being said, let's get you caught up now. We're taking a break from what we've done most of the season. Mike, we started this season hard with a bunch of clustered together episodes. We didn't have a lot of previously on. John, we're going to catch you up on so much.
Yeah, so we're going to have to.
I think the big reason we keep telling us, like, there's so much that happens at the top of the season that they just tie off, and then they go into this nice lull for the entire middle of the season. So we're picking up way later on towards the end of season four.
Right. Okay.
And yeah, so the key thing is, I mean, we really can't avoid spoilers at this point.
Previously on Babylon 5.
The last episode we did, which was called Into the Fire, which we had the fantastic Logan Trent on, was the end of the Shadow War. Most of this series has been about this evil ancient race, the Shadows, and everybody having to band together to fight them, very Lord of the Rings. In Lord of the Rings fashion, what JMS then did is, after the end of the Shadow War, all of the factions, all of the fighting, the taking back of the Shire, etc., etc. And this episode really kind of gets into some of the climactic aspects of that, right? We have this giant war, everybody bounds together. We have a fallout at the end of the war and one of the biggest races of the Minbari, which we are going to talk a lot about. We have seven episodes to go through. I'm going to do my best, and I get to laugh because I know Mike's just going to cut 90% of it, but it is fun. All right. Episode 7, which immediately follows the end of the Shadow War, was Epiphanies. We discover two things. Bester, who's going to show up in this episode, shows up back on Babylon 5, and he says, hey, there's a lot of backstory to throw at you, John, but just so you're aware, Bester's evil. Everybody knows he's evil. He had a mistress.
Nobody likes him, and he's a real creep.
Everybody hates him. But on the show, they ally with him, and the reason he allies with him is his illegitimate lover, mother of his future child, is infected with a techno virus, basically, if we're talking like X-Men style.
Oh, like Cable. Yeah.
Love that sentence. His mistress is Cable, and as a result, he allies, saying, if you like cure her, I'll be your bestie. So that's kind of the setup for that.
He's also getting really uneasy about the alliances back on Earth Force with the Psi-Core and Earth. So he knows that if he goes with them, he won't ever get her back. So he's trying to make the uneasy alliance now with Babylon 5.
It's an enemy of my enemy. He's doing a power grab. Like, the Psi-Core is in charge of all the telepaths, which is going to be important. It'll show up in this episode. And Bester doesn't want to lose control of it. So thing of the matter is, they inadvertently, thanks to Bester, blow up Zaha Doom again. So Zaha Doom was the base of the Shadows. They left. There was a bunch of technology there. Bester says, let's go get the technology. And Lita Alexander, who the telepath will meet in this episode, blows up Zaha Doom, which also causes allies of the Shadows to go out into the world and seek out other people.
Blow it up with her mind? Can they do that?
She
blow it up with her mind?
She did.
Word?
That happens.
All right. She's a powerful telepath. Yeah. And in the other...
Well, she have a problem getting a job, man. Just threaten to blow up Babylon 5 if she can't keep her apartment.
What the hell?
Yeah, you know, there should be. Oh, you always have that Jean Grey thing. Like, why is she having so much trouble out there? Like, yeah. Just
we need to downgrade your apartment to something way smaller.
No, make me. You don't.
Make me. I'm going to scanners your ass. Yeah,
that'll be interesting. And that'll be the biggest like flashback episode we're going to have as an FYI, just because did relate the most to this.
We also get Garibaldi in that episode because he starts getting activated and then he just quits as head of security and starts getting really paranoid, which...
Okay, so he was like a cop or something. I gathered that. Okay.
He was the one guy, Zach Allen, the head of security. Garibaldi used to have his job.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually what we also have that's pretty obvious is Garibaldi was former chief of security. He disappeared in the middle of the shadow war. He came back. Everybody was like, he's fine. Something's clearly not fine. We have the biggest sense of dramatic irony where it is very obvious the Psi-Corps kidnapped him. He's a Manchurian candidate of some sort. I'm not spoiling anything because we see it. And Bester is the head of the Psi-Corps. And Bester in that episode showing his evil, even as they think they got me, but I have something that will hurt them, something that will hurt them even more than everything. And then we like cut to Garibaldi. So
this Garibaldi, we don't care about Garibaldi. What are you talking about?
Yeah, this schlub over here is going to bring the whole thing down.
That's absolutely fun. Okay, now the next one we get, the illusions of truth. We've had a few of these where a news network comes onto the station and we're like, news bad? And yes, news bad, because Earth is under fascist control, ISN, Fox News.
Yeah, they got a Donald Trump, apparently.
Yep.
They do. Clark is absolutely a Donald Trump, easily analog. We have multiple.
There are several races have their own Trumps.
yeah, we see one of them in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost as if fascism spreads. So they let on a news crew and they're like, we'll let this news crew on to let the truth get out. And shocker, propaganda, lots of lazy editing, but the people back home will buy it.
Yep. Yeah, not much else on that, but it's exactly what you think. They just set him up for the first half of the episode by, oh yeah, we'll give you a good interview, let you tell your side of the story. And then this whole second half of the episode is them watching the actual broadcast and just falling apart.
Which is hilarious. Ish, I don't know. Hilarious set. Next episode, oh man, it's so hard not to just get stuck on stuff, Mike. But Delenn and Sheridan, our two mains, are star-crossed lovers, just like Lord of the Rings, elf and human. And her people don't like it. And so she has to go home and explain it. And there's a bunch of backstory, but Delenn finds a way to say, me and my man can be together no matter what you say, with lots of flashbacks.
That's the lady, that's the weird lady with the kind of like crown on her head, right?
Yeah,
with
she's the got weird the partial accent. Bone head. There's the full bone heads and she's half bone head. So that's
is
from.
She, like I was calling them the dragon people. Is she only half dragon?
Yeah, she started out as full dragon, the Mimbari people. And then after the first season, she ended up getting half human DNA to kind of combine the races. So that's why she's got the half bone crown still.
So that poor actress doesn't have to put that shit on every episode.
That is the actual reason why.
I think it was planned from the beginning. And then we talked a ton, if we're talking back episodes to catch up on episode one of season four. We talk a lot with Mad Red about prosthetics and stuff improving. Because, yeah. Previous seasons, those were rough.
Oh, yeah, you can see the silly putty just like was oozing out of her forehead.
And it is impossible for me in this show to just not get really hung up on like how amazing some of the technology and telepath stuff is that they just don't use. But don't think about it. All right. Next episode, Racing Mars. I have this note. We find out that mind controlling immortal alien parasites, it's fine, though, right? So we're in a war with Earth. Mars is a colony of Earth. There are not any doom-like aliens on Mars, sadly, John. No. They go to Mars to meet with the Resistance, and we also discover that former allies of the Shadows can basically mind control people at will. And our doctor finds out about it, Dr. Franklin. I don't think he's in this episode with you. Then next episode, we have lines of communication. We're introduced to the next big bad, underwhelming and confusion. So we are introduced to the Drock. You don't see him at all, John, but they're going to be kind of important in there. I would really say, Mike, this will be for a future episode, the Drock are very clunky.
Yeah, they're just like, JMS, I think, had them, needed to wrap them up as a loose end, figured out in season five that he could use it to tie something together he didn't get to, and it just feels so clunky, because they were the slaves of the Shadow people. They were like living on the Shadow planet when it got blown up,
And their whole thing is now they want revenge for blowing up their masters. And that's really about it.
We'll have to do like a wrap up on Shadow Vorlon thing, because the Drock seem antithetical to the Shadows, but they kind of work, but not really. And we'll leave them alone because we'll get to the other cool stuff.
We'll get to them in season 5. Yep.
Now, episode 12, Conflicts of Interest. What we do get is a few important things. We get Ivanova is now leading like a voice of the resistance. So ISN, this big network run by Earth that is a propaganda wing. Ivanova, we got to counter it. We got to fight back. Right, we got to fight back against Earth. I think that's going to be important. And then Garibaldi winds up working for this big multi-billionaire from Mars who is working on this.
He's in charge of one of the hugest pharmaceutical companies in the future that has places on Earth and Mars together. And he is manufacturing some kind of, it's supposed to be a cure for telepathy, but it's supposed to get rid of telepaths so that the political faction on Earth that is against the telepaths who are working with the Earth Force can take over that political faction. So, yeah, that's what he's got in for it.
I'm going to guess that he's also probably not what he seems.
Weird. No one here is exactly what they appear, right?
No, I mean, they also just telegraph that. It's like you don't see him. His voice sounds like a game show host, so you know it's probably made up, too. I wouldn't be surprised if he's just some kind of like lizard monster.
And I was going to say, what's weird about that is he turns out to be exactly what he sounds like and seems. He's just some rich tech guy on Mars when you actually meet him.
That's disappointing.
Yeah, not really bumbling, but he has like schemes that don't really go too far.
I was expecting something like Mr. House from like Fallout New Vegas or something like that, or the leader of the Enclave in Fallout 3, where it's just like a computer or something like that, or something weird.
I'm always hoping for Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget, just some like totally evil guy from the back petting his cat with a deep voice. Look at you next time.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Turns out to be the chief. No, I think that was just like a fan theory though, but
I love it. Okay.
Getting off on Inspector Gadget.
All right, we're almost there. In fact, the previous episode is mostly a filler. Rumors, bargains, and lies where Mimbari, the bonehead planet, like war has broken out and we're trying to get a bunch of stuff happening. And we do get Narun and Delenn maybe collaborating, but then Narun leaves and maybe they're not. Narun is the guy that is cool at the end. I don't want to spoil the thing before the end of that thing.
He's the guy who explodes in this episode.
All right, I guess we'll just ruin it. The last episode, we got a fake out, right? Where we think he's betrayed us, but he hasn't. And then we also get
destiny to explode.
And then Sheridan makes the Model UN, but that's not going to matter for a few more episodes, Mike. So that was fine. All right. We managed to get through it, Mike.
You made it,
Dre. Nothing can stop us now. Full speed. Let's get on with the episode.
Let's get on with it. You know what we're getting to next? John, are you ready for the Talia Winters memory quiz on this episode?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Time for the quiz. Yeah. We're going to have 5 questions on Babylon 5, the newest episode that you just saw. There will be a category for each episode, and the first category is Garibaldi's Law. Question, what are Garibaldi's 3 rules about taking a courier job? It's the 3 things that he tells Eggers at the top of the episode that he won't transport.
Let's see. Drugs, probably. He was a cop.
All right.
People,
no trafficking.
And weapons.
You're very close. What he exactly said was nothing dangerous, explosive, or illegal.
Oh,
so I'm going to give you half credit because all those things are dangerous and illegal.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Category for the second question is Garibaldi's number 2. What does Bester suggest Security Chief Allen get more of in his diet?
Oh, I remember this. Fiber, because he thought it was a very funny joke. And it just did not land. Like, I can hear
crickets.
And Mike
adds to the joke. I caught it, Mike. I'll give it to you. Mike doesn't give easy questions unless there's a joke in them, John, so you should feel lucky.
Yeah.
All right, 3rd question. The category is ground control to Major John.
I got promoted.
Why wasn't Sheridan able to travel to Mimbar to visit Delenn?
Wasn't there a war or something there?
Yes, they were.
They're having to surrender to Shakira.
Yes, exactly. Shakira's people, the warrior clan, was bombarding the religious clan where she was. Yep, exactly. All right. Fourth question. The category is how to sell out on Babylon 5. Ooh. Why couldn't Lita get a job as a corporate telepath?
Oh, because she wasn't a member of the telepath corp. Or the psychor.
Yeah, you got to be in the guild if you want to be get a job.
Yeah. Guilds, I play Skyrim. I've played those kind of games before. I'm very familiar with what a guild is, so that made sense to me.
All right, we're coming into the last question with 3.5 out of 5. You're definitely going to be on the leaderboard. The category is Landlords of Waterdeep. What alien race enhanced Lita's telepathic abilities and then stopped paying for her rent?
Jesus. Was it the Fellowship?
Ooh, no, it was actually Vorlons. The Vorlons gave her the telepathic powers.
Of course, the Vorlons.
All right, so we end with 3.5 out of 5. Good job at the Tally Winters memory quiz, John.
Oh, sweet.
All right, as mentioned, this episode is fascinating in that we have an A plot and a B plot and a little C plot. And so we're going to discuss all three. The C plot will go last, and it's very minor. But unlike a lot of previous episodes, at least in earlier seasons, they are very disjoint. I would make the argument, and I think, Mike, you did this in the script, agree. Our A plot and B plot, there is no reason to cut back and forth between them, barring just like science fiction convention.
Yeah, there's some episodes of Babylon 5 where JMS does a great job of cutting between two themes and having them show off between different plots playing against each other. This is another one of those episodes, though, where there's completely two different treks. So, yeah, I think we should just take the Lita and Garibaldi trek and go through that whole plot first and then come back and get all the Delenn stuff.
I like it. I'm more than fine. You cool with that, John? Starting with Lita?
Yeah.
Starting with the creepy Bester?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, let's do that. I was excited about Walter Koenig being in this, and then watching him, I was like, ugh.
Okay, so Bester, all over the place, big bad, normally sparring with our main crew. This episode, though, he's just kind of in the background. He even says, he lampshades it when he comes on. He's like, I don't need to always be interacting with the crew. And as such, he is not as nefarious as we've seen him. So it's funny, because like when the nefarious guy is involved in major political stuff, you're like, ah, how evil. And when he's not, you're like, you're just a weirdo creep.
Well, usually when we get a Bester episode, we get a Bester episode where he's causing all these different things all over the place to happen. He's interacting with everybody at every level of the crew. And this one we're just talking about, he just comes in, swoops in to creep on somebody and leaves a few times. Like, he only interacts
with... I want your body.
I mean, he says it pretty much like that, too. And then he's, what? You misunderstand me. He's like, why did you say it like that?
How could you misunderstand that?
And now, Dre explains.
What I do love about Bester is he is creepy and conniving and almost unapologetically so in the show. But that's what we're noticing, right, is when he's doing that against the shadows, against our bigs, we're like, ah, this is so awesome. And when he's just doing it, like, against a random like storekeeper, you're like, oh, you're weird. Okay, so that's a little bit of Bester backstory we need. But what we get first is Garibaldi is woken up by William Edgars. Edgars is a modern day tech CEO. You got to be available 24 hours. I'm available. I'm always up. I'm working 24 hours a day. I'm not just tweeting, right? Classic Elon Musk.
It's the blessing of Slack, isn't it?
Yes. So Edgars wakes up, says, I need you to get something through customs. Garibaldi is our transporter where he's, you know, whatever. And Edgars explains, hey, I'm not doing anything illegal. I got good reasons. It's a patent. It's not ready yet. We do know for what it's worth that Edgars is doing a lot of stuff with telepaths. That is going to be huge. Garibaldi is working for someone doing something major with telepaths. I wonder who would care about that. Now we get back to Lita Alexander. A little more backstory that's important that Mike already kind of hinted at is the Vorlons. So, John, did you just catch in this on that scene on the job interview and other stuff? Did you kind of catch that Lita is more important than she appears, but is kind of put upon in a Spider-Man way?
I mean, when Chekhov came back and was hounding her about her body, I picked that up on that a little bit. Yeah, it wasn't really that clear to me until Garibaldi was like talking to her and he's, how far is your reach? And she says, this is the official one. And he's like, unofficial, she's further. So I was like, oh, okay. So she's, and he, you know, Walter wants her body. Ew, but, you know, she's clearly, something's up with her powers. Gleaned that.
Yeah. Well, they did the whole like Spider-Man thing with her where they just put upon her and everything starts going wrong left and right on her in this one. So yeah,
I felt bad for her at the end of the episode. I was just like, oh man, I hope she doesn't have to stay.
They put her through the ringer, and then like that final shot, it just even to skip to the last of her putting on the PsyCorps uniform. I mean, that's having your most progressive friend being forced to put on an ICE agent uniform these days. So it's like that's kind of what she's going for. She's having to put on. Her whole background is about her getting away and then performing experiments upon her. So her having to do that to just make any ends meet is the worst thing you can think. So it's really downer of an end to this.
Now, I don't typically like to spoil too much in the future on the show, but I think for season 5, Mike, we are skipping most of it. So I'm comfortable kind of using this show to talk a little bit about it here. I feel Lita, he didn't really end her off that well, including even like their books and comics where he completes her story arc. I felt her end was kind of muddled, and the best thing I can give, Mike, is he can't leave her in the show proper because she's too powerful. So, John, as you mentioned, you caught that she was a little more powerful, but like literally a few episodes back, as I discussed, she was able to hold Bester off. Bester's one of the most powerful telepaths in the galaxy. He was able to hold him off. She was able to blow up a planet, basically set off all of the planetary defenses with her mind. She is that powerful because she's touched by a Vorlon. So she is the most powerful telepath in the galaxy.
I don't like that.
If she sticks around,
people got to quit trying to touch her.
Yeah, they should. But that's the problem, is that if she sticks around and is on our hero's side proper, she does come back, but not like Major. It breaks a lot of stuff. So we have to sideline her, and the best JMS really has is she needs a job and no one wants to give her money.
Yeah, and she has that whole Superman thing going on later on in Babylon 5, where it's how do we explain that she's just not blowing things up left and right to solve these problems or kicking the enemy's ass from her quarters.
Now, what we get next is we get Garibaldi, who is doing his smuggling job, and this aligns with Bester coming in. So Zach Allen is Garibaldi's former second in command, and now he's in charge of security. Garibaldi manages to use his wily tricks. I'm shaking my head for the audio medium.
Talking to some guy in a hallway.
Uses his wily tricks to smuggle the stuff by security. At the same time, Bester comes on the station. And Zach Allen's, you're not coming on the station, Bester. We all hate you. And Bester's, I don't care about you, and we're fine. And then Zach Allen also sees Garibaldi and chases after him. So we get all of that going on. And just an important thing that we keep reiterating and hitting and seeing is that Garibaldi is absolutely like at ends with everybody and fighting almost to a hilarious degree, right? Because Zach is, what are you doing? And Garibaldi's like, I'm not doing anything illegal. And you clearly are. And the Garibaldi's like, I'm not illegal, you're illegal. But it's worth noting he is supposed to be contentious right now.
Yeah, he's got that whole Looney Tune thing in his brain going on. He idolizes Daffy Duck and can see him. So, I'm just going to be this like smart guy who can slip in and out and lie to the chief of security and get stuff out of there. It's no, they see right through you, Garibaldi.
For a minute there, I thought you were like actually saying that his character idolized Daffy Duck. And I was like, I have to watch the rest of this show right now.
Yeah, that's true. He has a giant poster of Daffy Duck in his quarters. There's times when like you'll just see in his quarters watching Looney Tunes, you'll start a scene. So yeah,
it's just the Wolverine meme with him like fingering like a cell, like a Looney Tunes cell of Daffy Duck.
In an earlier episode, he has a flashback saying you work only for us, which explains why he's like pushing back against everybody. And Zach Allen, for what it's worth, is the only one he's acting kind of strange. Isn't he acting strange? Which brings us to Lita, our super powerful redhead telepath that is going to get sidelined because she would break the story. And John, you've mentioned this like 4 or 5 times where Walter Koenig comes up, Bester, and just says a bunch of creepy stuff to her in the bar. But that's because she just gloriously failed, I'll put in quotes, a job interview. Because she was like, I'm a telepath. I need a job. I need work. And they went, you're not with the PsyCorps. We can't hire you if you're not with the PsyCorps. So she's drinking at the bar alone, upset. And who swoops in but Bester to say, hey, I got a loophole.
Hey, Dre from the future here. I realize we don't 100% explain Bester's skeezy deal. He agrees to get Lita, basically a fake PsyCorps driver's license, if, in exchange, she agrees to donate her genetically altered body to science after she dies. The worst organ donor program ever. So yeah, Lita ends the episode agreeing to let her body get experimented on by weirdos after her death in exchange for a job at ICE. Ouch.
For a minute, because I didn't know anything about this show, I was just like, is he actually asking for, or is he really coming on to her? I was like kind of confused for a moment. I was like, what? And he didn't take it. He didn't take the question back. So I was just like, is he coming on to her? What is happening here?
Yeah, that was so unclear in the scene, because even for someone like me who's been watching from the beginning and seen this, that felt like, why are you hitting on Lita out of nowhere?
And he's even dressed as a creep. Like, he's dressed like he's going into bars and asking women for their bodies.
And I can smell him through the screen.
But Lita's got scruples. She says, no, I really hope everything doesn't fall apart for her. Except we find out she's getting kicked out of her quarters. One of the parts about Babylon 5 is it's a lived-in universe, and we're basically told, you know, they have to make the money, right? They've broken away from Earth. They've had several things saying they have to make every credit they can. And they're like, hey, your room is worth space. Mike, she brings up a lot of good points that I cannot really counter. And so does Bester later when he comes back to her, where it's just like, she was literally one of the biggest parts of the war. Their first suicide mission was incumbent on her agreeing to come along. Like, she was the first person to stand up to a shadow. And they were unbeatable, so she was the
first
person.
And even in that situation, she didn't necessarily want to do it, but was cajoled into it and used by the staff. And then after it was done, she got no accords for it, no thanks or anything. She just got those quarters.
Yeah, so that makes me... A lot of these guys didn't really feel likable. Garibaldi, Zach Allen, like the two guys that are like John and Susan... I guess it's Sheridan and the other commander.
Not bad on just remembering the names out of thin air from the first watch. Yeah. I'm going to give impressiveness
but
to that.
Yeah, like they kind of bookend. No one was really, like, I liked Lita and the dragon head aliens were okay. But it's, everyone seemed kind of like scummy, like shitty a little bit.
Yeah, this is kind of like that time of the plot where like everything, like the creeping forces already come together. They have Earth has definitely taken completely towards fascism too. So you're coming in at a point where you're not getting a lot of the jokier, lighter scenes at all too, or even the character arcs too. That could be part of it.
Right. And you open up with Garibaldi having clearly, I mean, like what he's talking about doing is illegal. Like he's a smuggler and he's kind of got like a dirtbag's apartment. Like he got dirtbag accoutrement everywhere, like silk robe, like red walls and shit. And then the credits roll and he's like a main guy. I'm like, oh, he's a main character. He's a hero in this. What the
going on? I will say that's actually good for a random watcher. We should be confused about Garibaldi, and we get dramatic irony, right? The audience is watching him have weird flashbacks and we're going to see Bester scan him in the near future, right? All of that stuff. But everybody else is just, man, he's being a real jerk lately, which does actually tie in nicely to the next scene, which is Lita's getting kicked out of her quarters. And everybody is unlikable because she's getting kicked out by Zach, Garibaldi's second in command. And he's just, we're kicking you out. We need the money. The Vorlons aren't paying your bills anymore, which is, again, hilarious because the Vorlons are trying to destroy everybody. That also makes me laugh, Mike, the implications that, like,
they were just, like, handing a check over, like, putting some, like, Vorlon doubloons.
Yeah, they were sending invoices to the Vorlons, which is wild.
We're going to need a receipt for this, guys.
And just like Bester, he's, hey, you're getting kicked out of your apartment. That's rough, but I'll tell you what, I can make it worth your while if you scan my friend. And she's just, no, correctly so.
I did. Everybody's a dirt bag. Everybody is a dirt bag. And she just, I guess it was better that you were the one that told me. And I'm like, don't fuck that guy. Slap him in the face and kick his ass out. What the hell is going on?
And we definitely end up with a really weird incel, like, friend zone thing with him that I really do not like.
Oh, he put his hand on her shoulder and it's this whole, I was like, oh, so much of the stuff that happens with Lita, it's like all the guys around her are so creep.
Yeah, they had earlier a thing going in the last season where he was like helping her move into that particular quarters and being nice to her. They were kind of setting up a relationship between the two of them, and it just never went anywhere the story. And this is like the next beat of that, like a whole season later.
What I will throw out, and I put this on our notes, Mike, is this does thematically line up a lot with what the show has, which is like doing the right thing, even when it ends up in the wrong outcome, and like doing the right thing the wrong way, and what that says about character, because Lita refuses to scan Garibaldi. That being said, had she scanned Garibaldi, she might have actually found like the telepath stuff that Bester is doing. Yeah. And so it's kind of sad. And like later she's going to have to do it.
They couldn't let her scan him too at this point, you know, to that point. But it also does do it a nice way for a character where it shows that, yeah, she's not going to cross that line, even with what everything that she's being put through.
But like a couple of scenes later, though, Garibaldi's asking her to scan ahead. Still
look around.
Scanning
she won't
people.
Scan, but she can look. So, and I'm going to agree. Like it's fuzzy math, right? Where she's, I won't scan, but if I detect John is in the area, it's like, how will you detect him? It's by not scanning John. Okay, so Lita's out of options. She goes up to Garibaldi and, can I work for you? She comes up to him because Garibaldi is now a private investigator taking on
random
clients.
Yeah, he's a dirtbag private eye, which, like, I saw the guy. I'm like, okay, that tracks for you.
That's the intro to Garibaldi, dirtbag. Lita's like, can I get a job? He's, can you bend the rules but not bend the rules? She says, yes. And then Bester kind of walks by. Bester's just everywhere this episode. And as you notice, Lita says, hey, he scanned you.
Walk by mind molestation on Garibaldi.
And basically, as an FYI, to tie the plot that we keep saying together, it is 100% Bester came to the station to extract information from Garibaldi and like re-up his programming. That was his goal coming to the station. Lita is a side project. So the fact that they're like working together and they're both his goal is just, you know, serendipitous, which he'll talk later. But
now, did Bester dime Lita out to Mr. Eggers? And that's how Eggers found out. You got to fire her.
I don't think so. I think Eggers, we've kind of seen repeatedly. He's just got creepy dudes all over the station kind of spying on everything. So
yeah,
I think he just
knew. Mine, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think specifically he wouldn't be able. He wouldn't use Bester. Bester wouldn't do anything for him unless he was like playing a double agent or something.
Yeah. I just maybe thought he might have sent a word up to him. Like, oh, what? She's getting money? She's not going to be desperate if she has money. I need to. Need to get a word out to his boss.
Mm-hmm. No, he just knows he's got spies everywhere.
And yeah, Bester does at the end of the episode kind of say, hey, this kind of just fell into place. I don't think it was his original plan. And that is going to kind of end everything, which is Eggers calls up Garibaldi. It is, you can't work with a telepath. Garibaldi says, hey, aren't you supposed to be making a vaccine for telepaths? And interestingly enough, Eggers, if Garibaldi were on his game, maybe Mike, he's kind of at 50-50 as a detective.
He might have
noticed this, but he's not on his game. We know why. He just says, I thought you were helping telepaths. And Eggers is like, just because I'm helping him doesn't mean I want him near me. Really, Eggers doesn't want him near him because he's doing sketchy stuff. So if only the telepaths had a way to infiltrate Eggers, if only.
Oh, no. You mean he's not on the level?
He's not on the level. And Garibaldi is very clearly a mole planted by Bester to uncover Eggers' stuff.
It's a reverse spy.
He's a reverse spy. So Garibaldi has to fire Lita, very tragically, signs the paper, puts on the PsyCorps uniform. It's super sad.
I felt so bad for her in that, man. I didn't like that. I was I hope she gets out of it.
They just kept beating her down and beating her down all episode to the point where, you know, Bester was creeping on her and there was still another lower point after that.
You have Scott Adams guest starring. He guest starred on a fitting episode.
Yeah, it just kept going lower and lower on this plot line.
Yeah, it was just like, ugh.
It's like, bad omen. Oh, Scott Adams. Oh, no, bad omen.
Okay, now, rewind to the plot that doesn't tie in at all. They don't even try. Like JMS on other episodes sometimes has like a back and forth. On this episode, a few times Sheridan's, what about Minbar? But nope, they don't tie. They're completely separate. We get Minbari, the bonehead folk. They're going through a civil war. A little bit of backstory, John. They have a caste system, worker, warrior, religion.
I gathered that.
Thirds. They, yeah,
and
they
the
explain.
Warriors and the religious one don't like each other. They're having a war.
And the workers just kind of do their thing on the side.
And for what it's worth, I actually think, albeit via exposition, kind of natural exposition, they do explain it, where the warriors are like, the religious caste has been yanking our chain around for the last two decades. They'll send us into war and then pull us out of war. And then they'll like ramp up for a war without telling us against the shadows. And that's like unacceptable. Yeah. So actually...
Oh, yeah. They're like, we should be the ones to control our own destiny since we're the ones sending out everybody to fight instead of these religious wackos over here.
Yeah.
And they make some good points, which is funny. But what we've got is we're on Minbar and they're destroying everything. A line throughout the show has been Minbari do not kill Minbari. But Mike actually clocked this on the Gray 17 episode with Dave Bell. So I'm so glad we did that, Mike, because I get to bring this up. On Gray 17 is missing the worst episode of the show, John. We made Dave Bell watch it because we love Dave around here. They have a ritual for one-on-one fighting to the death. And when we were watching that episode, Mike raised his hand and was like, they don't kill each other.
But they have an established ritual for beating each other to death.
It's not the blue energize beam?
That too.
So that's what that was.
They also have that blue energized beam. There's several different rituals based around killing each other, or in this one, like a game of deadly chicken, pretty much.
I'm looking forward when we get that. And so, but the biggest point I'm going to bring up is Mike actually, we viewed it as like a plot hole or a weird contrivance where it's the flip side, where it's like, Minbari don't kill Minbari, but it's, wait, why have the warrior caste been teaching all of our fight to the death rituals then? Like, I don't know. So the warriors have clearly broken the rule on killing Minbari. They're bombing the religious cities. And of course, the religious caste is just going to have to, you know, resign.
I have a lot to say about the Minbari. So first, what I put in my notes was like I'm not an actor, but like reading these lines and then seeing what you're going to be wearing has to be a huge bummer for these guys. Like the makeup on them. I don't know if you guys have ever watched it. You can find it on YouTube, but if you've ever watched like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, there's like a series with Richard Iwade called Man to Man with Dean Lerner. And it's set up like this old talk show hosted by Richard Iwade's character from Garth Marenghi. And then Matt Holness just comes in on it as a bunch of different guests. It's really funny. But he comes in as like the Star Trek guy on one of them. It's like from like a Battlestar Galactica type show, but he wears these like prosthetics and stuff. He's supposed to be like a space whore or something. It's really funny. Just reminded me so much of like looking at this. In particular, what bugged the shit out of me was their fucking ears, which are on like the hinge of their jaw.
Yeah.
Every time I saw it, it infuriated me, and I could not explain to you why. They had these like tiny little ears on the hinge of their jaw.
Why? Why have them? It's the most distracting design. Why couldn't you even just, you have ears, just put the bone over the ear. That's so much less prosthetics you have to do.
I didn't need to understand how they heard. They're a fucking alien. I can assume that they hear me. I don't need to see little ears on their fucking chin. That's just an added stupid thing that you have to put on this poor actor's face.
Yep.
Why put the ears
on
them?
John is sending me down an ear rabbit hole that I'm not going to be able to escape, but I'm going to do my best. I'm going to pull up. We get Narune, who is, I really like this actor. He's the heroic warrior caste Minbari that gets a lot of screen time. He has been throughout the show, and he has kind of been a frenemy of Delenn, kind of regularly. At one point, he wanted to beat her to death, which who among us hasn't? And then was like, I was wrong. My bad. So they had a meeting last episode where we thought he betrayed her. And we're even seeing it now. He goes to the warrior leader, Shakiri. All right. Hips don't lie. And he goes, the warrior
doesn't wiggle him at all. doesn't wiggle his hips at all.
He doesn't, right?
I liked him better.
That's why he fails.
I liked him better.
This guy, we've never seen him before, for what it's worth, John. So this guy is definitely a, hey, we need a big bad for one episode. Weird. He's the leader of the warrior caste, and is telling Nerun, I'm mad at the religious caste. We're going to drag him down. We're going to take over everything. They messed with us. What is frustrating, like I said, is we have a Black Panther problem that we're going to come into in a scene, which is we find out he's a coward. I hate to say it. Nothing he says in this scene is incorrect. Delenn of the religious caste got the entire planet into a giant war that killed more of their people than anything. It cost them their flagship, like warrior ship, like the best warrior ship. It cost them that. She is now dating the guy that destroyed that. And she's also the one that said, actually, my bad, we're quitting. So the fact that they're going, Delenn and the religious caste keep getting us into wars and sacrificing us without good reason is not untrue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but two things can be true. And Shakira is also an unmitigated dick in this episode, too, because all he's talking about.
I wouldn't trust him.
Yeah, he's just talking about all warriors are born to die. They're born to die. Oh, no, that's not going to come back to haunt you later in this episode, is it? When you're that much wanting to throw your own soldiers under the sword, you know, for your own purposes, and like immediately pretend to make good with Delenn and then talk right away about, but we're just going to kill her as soon as she gets on her ship again. So very unarguable. Yeah.
He seems like he's telling like a lot of half truths. Like you're like, yeah, that's technically true, but, and I don't know what the but is because I haven't seen the other episodes, but it's just, yeah, you know, we're the ones bleeding out in the battlefield. And I was like, I don't see any scars on you, bud. So I don't know if like you were actually out there, but yeah, it seems like he's pretty much just telling people what they want to hear. So he can get the driver's seat.
Yeah, it's more like he may have a point, but do you have to be such a dick about it?
Well, and I'll say even better, right? This is definitely the Black Panther thing, which is, yeah, he's saying a bunch of stuff that's true, but then he's going, yeah, but we're going to wait, right? We'll assassinate Delenn when this is all over, right? So we'll let her surrender, but then we're going to get rid of her. Later, he's going to be very cowardly and not live up to his words. So we do get that, which is fair. But he does have a point. I will say the good news is his point is actually heard. They go to surrender. And Warrior Cat's like, fantastic, all good. She quotes Dakot, who was her leader. And she's, Dakot said, before we can move forward, one side must surrender. She's like, just because we surrender doesn't mean we agree to just give you all power. She's, we're admitting we lost. And now the Mimbar folk, can all decide together, which they don't actually now that I'm thinking about this, Mike, but whatever. Let it go.
Now you have to enter the blue circle of chicken with me.
And yeah, she basically says, fine, we're ending, but she does the classic Game of Thrones trick. Let's have our heroes fight. She's, remember that ritual that none of us should remember because it's 1,000 years old for trial by combat to the death that they have. So Mike noticed one in the last episode we did on this. John, you know, they have multiple fights to the death in this culture that despite being outlawed for 1,000 years, everybody still knows. Kind
of
weird.
One of my favorite shots is like when they're actually doing the ritual, they keep going back to shots of the crowd. There is like a coliseum of Mimbari boneheads watching this take place in the background.
Yeah. And it's worth noting that in one of the talks with Lanier, he even says what we're affirming. He's going, Valen, just watch, listen to the War Without an End episode. I'm not doing spoilers and deep dives on that. Valen said all of this stuff. And it quelled a lot of underlying tensions in our race, but they were always there just waiting to come out. Does that sound familiar? Underlying racism, just waiting to come out. Weird.
I'm not making any connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, John. I might be too over people's heads. But yeah, so Delenn goes, we surrender, but FYI, prove you're a warrior.
We don't surrender.
No, she surrenders just like Leta doesn't scan, right?
Which is, it kind of got, because I didn't know anything about their culture or anything. She's, no, I said we surrendered. I didn't say we gave up or what she said. And I was just like, wait a minute. No, I don't think you know what surrendering means.
But I mean, to be fair, she did a nice trap. She's like, we will surrender right in front of the death fighting place. And they're like, absolutely. And she's like, actually, I don't surrender. Want to play a game of death fight 101?
Yeah.
He's absolutely. So this thing is apparently, as Mike pointed out, a game of like blue steel chicken. This giant thing, almost like a blue
beam.
Glass.
It's like a teleportation beam. It looks like that hurts.
I couldn't tell if it was that or if it was like opening, if it was a beam that was coming in or if it was like opening to the sky, almost like a, you know, like I was saying, like a magnifying glass.
But it's basically got like a radioactive rock up there that has a pinpoint, you know, thing that comes out. Kind of, you know, you're the dentist getting in, they have to put that big lead thing over you and go to another room and say it doesn't hurt. That's what that is.
It would actually make sense that they would need super big beams to do dental work or like bone work because of the bone heads.
Because this is like such big bone heads. They got to get into all those crevices up there.
So this is actually a dent, like a bonehead office. And guys, can you guys finish this up?
That's got to be a pain in the ass, you know, like being a bonehead. Bathe yourself or wash that. Like, they probably have like brushes or something like that, don't they? Like this big ass. Like,
apparently they use a polymer to shed their skin. They don't have the same thing. I can't believe I know that.
It's a molting situation.
Everybody on the show is so fucking gross. Ugh.
I love it. Okay. So she says, let's fight to the death under the dentist ray, which is just going to burn us both alive. And it's a game of chicken. First one to flinch loses. And he's, you know, he's being real cowardly. Why don't we just go out together? No one would know. And she is literally, Delenn is, I will burn this to the ground. And the only reason I think that's funny, because you didn't see this episode, John, rightfully, is her backstory is she got so angry when her mentor was killed. She started like the biggest war before the previous biggest war, the second biggest war in the last 10 years.
The war
like
that happened before we started the series. Yes. Yeah.
She started and she's been like telling her sister, listen, I'm better. I know you're worried. I'm going to flip out, but I'm cool. Right. And then we get here and she's, I will burn this place to the ground. You're like, oh, you're not cool. So yeah, she's, you are wrong. You will admit you're wrong. I will burn everything to the ground. He hops out, she wins. And then she's, I am going to kill myself to prove how much this means to me.
Well, that was cool. When Shakira stepped into the blue light with her, like he immediately went hers and started to bargain for his life. We can go out together. We can rule like this. And that's when she pulled out all like the fire and brimstone. No, we're doing this right.
This is a wild scene because Delenn told Sheridan they're dating. They're set to be married. She said that she'd be back and she's, I'm good. And then as a result, Narun,
maybe not. I gotta go school Shakir over here in this blue light.
Narun, who's been the frenemy to Delenn, has a great arc conclusion. He hops in, pushes Delenn out, and he's, I was born warrior, but I realize I was religious, and boom, he dies.
That's a weird, such a weird dark thing to say. Considering the what's happening.
Yeah, Garibaldi will never take a courier position for him now. He explodes.
Oh, I know. It's like, my heart is religious. I'm like, that's not good either. No, I don't like either of these guys. So when she brings in the worker cast later on, I'm like, okay, we're balancing it out. Okay,
these are
see
the
what
chill
you're
guys. We're going to chill and let these guys take over. The ones that have been trying to bombard each other for years.
Let's keep the warriors and the religious guys separate for a little while. Maybe not make any decisions for a little bit.
So yeah, they fight. Mike correctly notices that Lanier, when Delenn is handed to him, looks weird. And yeah, I don't like how Lita's story's arc was handled. We'll get to more Lanier in the future. And I think a lot's been set up properly for him. And then right as you already said, John.
Yeah, that was another creep, though, just to go back. That was, to go to John's points about everybody being creepy in this episode, this is the only episode when I noticed stuff like that. Like, Lanier is getting really creepy when he gets to touch Delenn as she has taken her out of the blue light.
He was almost sweating.
Yeah. Like, that was infectious. I think it's something that Bester put in the water to make everybody creepy this episode.
And then we do get the resolution where Delenn comes out. She reforms the Grey Council, which is kind of a bummer because, let me set this up for you, John. Grey Council is a group of 9 people that wear robes, that are in the shadows, that decide everything for this giant race kind of without their decision, maybe if they don't like it. So Delenn disbanded the Grey Council, and that's why everything went to civil war. And she even says, hey, Surrendering doesn't mean I give up, right, is what she says. So, and then when we're all...
Because they said I give up doesn't mean I give up.
She's, everybody should have a voice. And we're like, awesome. And then we get back in. She's like, okay, so I'm reforming the Grey Council. I'm like, all right. To be fair, what she does do, right, is she gives four worker, two religious, two warrior, and then one seat is just open in honor of Nerun. So we now get 50% worker representation in like the global hierarchy.
Yeah. I mean, I did notice that. I was like, oh, so she liked that half the votes are going to the workers. So basically, these chuckle fucks can't do anything else unless these guys consent. Okay, that's a pretty good one. I thought she was going to name everybody. I was afraid she was going to name everybody one by one, and my fears were realized. She did name every single person there.
You got to know them. You got to know them for reasons. Okay, so we end with graduation. It's funny because, like I said, I'm not happy she remade the Grey Council, but in terms of like compromises, this kind of ends up the best. And this is one of, you know, those side retaking the Shire kind of moments. And I will say this, Mike, I thought for the most part it played well, with the exclusion of a lot of things we're noticing this season was very rushed, because he thought he was going to have five seasons to wrap everything up. Then he thought he had four. So he did like in wrestling parlance, you know, just like hot shot at a territory. Mm-hmm. To get all of his stories out. And that's why this episode can't even like connect itself. It's like there's no way to clean up the Leeta story and the Minbari story organically. He just puts them on at the same time.
And then he introduces like a third story, it seems, after the very last scene.
Yeah, I'll say any ends on Minbari, Mike, and then the very last thing is just very quick because it's just a cliffhanger to what's coming next.
Oh no, we got to pretty much everything I wanted to talk about. We got to the crowd and everything. Yeah. Nerun's cool. Glad he exploded. Pulling out for Nerun. That's about
it. And like I said, this also lets us tie up Grey 17 one more time, Mike, because in Grey 17 is missing, the worst episode of Babylon 5, Nerun has a line to Marcus. He says, you know, you made me realize about myself. And then Marcus says to Nerun, the next time you have an epiphany, could you possibly choose one that isn't so painful? This is Nerun's next epiphany, and he explodes. So that's a heck of a Chekhov's gun, in my opinion. The cruelest twist of fate. Nerun, next time you have an epiphany, could we not do one with a battle to the death? And Nerun's like, no deal.
And the next one is, I am religion. And he immediately explodes.
Yeah, immediately explodes. Okay, we do get the cliffhanger that lets the rest of the plot go forward. Because again, we're shoving a lot of storylines in. Babylon 5 broke away from Earth because they're under martial law under President Clark. How is Babylon 5 going to actually fight back? And Ivanova hops in and is, you know, I've been doing telecasts and trying to fight back nicely. They're bombing civilians. We got to do something. And John Sheridan's, you know what? We're going now. And anyone who gets in our way, he says, you know, God
they
help anyone who
us,
gets in our
we
way.
We get three of theirs, that whole like really bare bullish.
Yeah, he does like
military
Tombstone,
approach.
The usual suspects, every like all the cliches in one. We're going to fight Earth. It was very much a shove out the door because we were moving very slow. Babylon 5 and Earth are in this intelligence war with each other. Bester's doing stuff. How are they going to fight? And then they basically the author just pops in and is, they need to fight now.
Yeah, this Sheridan is just kicking off the fuse for the entire last story of this season where they're going up against Earth Force.
I will say, watching the end of this last scene and not knowing anything else about the show, he sounds like a dangerous lunatic.
Yep. It's like the Garibaldi approach, because that's his whole thing, is he starts going against Sheridan, because he's like, you kind of got a god complex. And even though there's Psycor is making him think that, Sheridan really does have kind of a god complex in some of these things.
And she's like, are you sure? We'll fucking kill them all. I don't give a shit. Blow up all their ships. They blow up one of ours. We're going to blow up three of theirs.
What I did love is Ivanova comes in and is like, this is too far. We got to do something. And you're right. He sounds unhinged because she comes in literally saying, we have to do something. And he's like, all right, we're going to kill them all. And she's like, oh, hold up. Like, oh, we're not on the same page. And for what it's worth, like that'll play in a good way. Like the author actually does use that in the future. JMS does bring that up later and does add a lot of nice character arc, right? Was he doing it the right way? That stuff will show up. It's cool things. So anyway, John, episode of Babylon 5, You watch blind. If this was a wrestling match, where would you rank this? That'd be the easiest answer I'd give you.
Ooh, if this was a wrestling match.
Or let's do WrestleMania. Like, where would you put this WrestleMania card-wise? You know, not as bad as 9, clearly, but, you know, not like top WrestleMania.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, like, on the card. Because I would put this,
that's
like,
too much work. Just, like, how good do you, like, how would you rank this as a wrestling match?
Like an Intercontinental Championship. Like the Intercontinental match. On the card. That's where I would put
who? Would it be like a Stone Cold Rock Intercontinental or like Miz versus a guy we don't know anymore?
I would say like Mr. Perfect versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan, because that makes about as much sense as this episode. But it's still entertaining though. It's just, all right, yeah, let's get a couple creeps in there and have them fight it out.
I was not expecting that. Like, I asked the different question. We're not doing the other question. And I'm like, that's the answer. I'm going to edit this together. So that's the question I asked.
See, you
that's
were asking beautiful. The one, and I came up with the better, yeah. like a better one.
It's a punch up.
You're like, instead of answering the question you asked, I'm going to come up with a better one and answer that one instead. And you know what? No complaints.
I can't remember what the WrestleMania was when each McMahon picked their own wrestler, and it was like Mankind or Mick Foley, Triple H, The Big Show, and The Rock, and they all had to fight each other. They all had to do a match with each other. That would be where I would put that one. I can't remember.
See, the Jim Duggan one I love, but that WrestleMania one, you know, I'm such a big fan of Mick Foley around here, and he himself like laments that, where he wasn't ready, kind of. You know, McMahon was just kind of giving him a handout because he knew he'd like never had that moment. That's probably accurate. I will take the amalgam of those two ratings. I will say that WrestleMania and that card, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like on the card, though, this is about a mid-level, but like a match that is, you don't know what it would look like, but it's really, you're really intrigued by it.
I agree. Mike, it's hard to top that.
Babylon 5, don't really know what it is, but really intrigued by it. I'd say kind of the same thing like this far into the show. So yeah, good one, John.
Now, very last thing, John, do you have any intention of checking out any more Babylon 5 after we made you watch that? That's been the answer.
All things being equal, I'd probably just go. I was like, when I was watching, I was like, I kind of want to watch Firefly right now. As far as like weird, like cheaply made sci-fi. So I was like, yeah.
With much less time investment. Also, you haven't, you know, one of the things we're running into, Mike, with having people watch episodes in season 4, we're like, okay, so here's the wrap-ups to all these major arcs. You're going to watch more. And it's
he just heard us talk about it. He doesn't need to anymore. He knows everything.
He knows everything.
As soon as I saw the... what are they called? The Membari. As soon as I saw them, I was like, oh, fuck. I don't know if I'm ready for this.
I can't take these ears.
I can't take these ears, man.
But very last thing then, John, outside of course, WrestleMovia over on Gamefully Unemployed, which I believe is on the free feed, which is awesome. So anywhere you can search for Gamefully Unemployed, that's spelled Gamefully. Unemployed is spelled like it sounds. WrestleMovia with you and Logan Trent. It is a blast. And you are just getting into watching movies with wrestlers. There is so much more to watch. I am so excited.
Yeah, and you can get in right at the top. I was saying there's only, what, 3 episodes out so far?
There are 4. There are 4 out right now. Yeah.
Cool. So it's still a good time to catch up to right from the beginning on WrestleMania. Mm-hmm.
Well, what I'll also throw to it, though, comparing it to, you know, say an episodic podcast, Mike, is... it's one where you can drop into any one, right? Anyone is entertaining. Mm-hmm. You don't need to listen to all 4. If you just want to hear about Santa with Muscles instead of watching it, dear God, do not watch Santa with Muscles. If you just want to listen to that, you can just drop in. So I do absolutely respect that and love it. So WrestleMovia, then you also have Screamplay, where you and either Tom Ryman or Logan Trent play a scary video game. Those are
we talked about it. And Tom is back. Logan guested for a little bit because if y'all don't know, Tom is a new dad himself. But yeah, we're coming back. We actually just recorded one and it should drop, if not this month, then early next month.
Very cool.
I am looking forward to that.
Thanks.
Cool. And I guess the other thing we ask everybody is there anything else that you'd recommend to our guests or anything you'd want them to check out? You did mention Garth Marenghi's Dark Place earlier.
Yeah, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Mm-hmm. If you want to look at something for like the episode I was talking about that this made me think of is from a show called Man to Man with Dean Lerner. All the episodes are up on YouTube. It's Richard Awade and Matthew Holness, who plays Garth Marenghi. And it's very funny. Garth Marenghi is actually the guest in one of the episodes. But it's just like this old like 1980s late night talk show type thing. It's very funny.
Yeah, it's a British Garth Marenghi, BBC series. It is.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know if you can find it on like BritBox or Acorn, but like I said, all the episodes are on YouTube. It's pretty goddamn funny.
Yeah, I love all those old British series like Black's Books and stuff. I went through all that. That's the other one I love.
No, Bill Bailey wasn't in that one, was he?
No, I don't think so. There's the one comedian I'm blanking on him now.
Black's Books was like the guy from Shaun of the Dead, I think, was like the main guy, the not quite Alan Rickman guy.
But, interesting.
Bill Bailey. Yeah, that was the guy.
I figured he was in it. I thought he was in that.
Yep. And then I got to give my own shout. I say I was talking to Logan last episode about Kieran Gillen comics. So I went on and read all of Die since I was talking to Logan about it. And the current series that Kieran Gillen, it's a sequel to that called Die Loaded. It is an amazing fantasy series. It's these people get sucked into a D&D adventure fantasy game and have to play it in real life, but when they're kids. And they get out and they're missing for 2 years. And it's about what happens when they grow up and they get sucked up back into the same game, except now they have like adult life. But it's really good. The themes are really great. He uses everything about what it's like to build fantasy worlds and live them, about escapism. Highly recommend it. It's got great watercolor art too to it. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'll just jump on to something. I think, John, you and I are both Richard Iowati fans. And he's the best. It's hard for me not to, you know, associate a lot with him, right? If I let my hair go crazy, it could be the spitting image. And I think you liked the joke I made once where I was just like, for the new Superman, James Gunn was like, for Clark Kent, I want Richard Iowati. And he is. You look at it and it's like perfect. You're like, what's the perfect Clark Kent? Richard Iowati. All right, y'all, we've given people enough to see. We have talked for a ton. I had a blast. We did it. We did it, everybody.
We got to the end. John, it was so great getting to do this with you.
Oh, thanks. It was a lot of fun. It was an interesting time. I had a nice little evening.
You've been a really good follow for the past few years on Blue Sky, too.
Oh, yeah. Follow me on Blue Sky at Johnny Rhymes. I dip in and out right now just because of the climate and shit that's going on in the world. Probably a good idea for the rest of y'all to unplug every once in a while, but I am on there if you want to follow me. It's at Johnny Rhymes.
And just to be aware, as an FYI, there is an extra N. So it's at Johnny Rhymes, J-O-H-N-N-Y, and then Rhymes is actually R-I-M-E-S, which is spelled differently than your last name. And I still make the joke routinely because you do podcasts with your brother, Tom Ryman. You could be the Ryman. It's right there.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that last time, and we resoundly refuse.
And I'll keep doing it. Every time I'm on a podcast with one of the Rye Men, it's going to come up.
You do it.
And by the way, don't forget you got to check this out. We're at patreon.com/Jeff May. That can help, you know, pay the bills for more, potentially. You can head over to mikeslater.com to find out more. Mike is on most social medias as either Slatron, S-L-A-T-R-O-N, or Slatron 11. If you don't find Slatron, look for Slatron 11. And I am most places as Nerd Numbers. We will see you next time with...
It's going to be Season 4, Episode 17 of Babylon 5, The Face of the Enemy. So we'll be covering that next time with our guest.
Face of the Enemy is Minbari with those creepy ears. Love it. We'll see y'all then.
Cheers, all.